Hello, welcome back. Let's do something first, which some of us seem to be having trouble with still, from before reading, when we were all still children, and, you know, we were young and things seemed possible. Chimed over something. Regulation, Europe, how that interacts with the UK, some of us seem to be finding this a bit maddening. You've studied EU law, I haven't, so you tell me. This is how the regulation works, and this is how Europe is involved, okay? Jolly good, you know, Robert Kilroy silk to one side. There is a thing called Europe. Okay? English try to pretend it isn't there, but there is a thing called Europe, yes? And it's, you know, kind of this shape, and it's over here. We then have the UK, which I'd like to do in red, white, and blue, which we will just represent in this way, and there's a little bit more over here. Lots of our financial regulation begins at the European Union level, okay? So let's change that, let's add some red bits on there to make that European Union and thus look much scarier, yes? And the Lanfalussy process at the European level is what's now used. Originally it was just securities regulation, but now it's everything, to create directives, yes? Those directives, when created, then come across the channel. Does it sound English enough? So parochial enough, yes? They then come across the channel, whether we want them or not. They come over here, taking our law or something. And then they are implemented, yes? Now, we know this from doing EU law, that something comes from Europe, it then has to be implemented into English law and or Scots law and or Northern Irish law, or in the case of financial services, into UK law, okay? When I was an undergraduate, if you'd have written about UK law or anything other than revenue law, you would have lost marks immediately because there's no such thing, okay? But now with financial services law, company law, these are all, they all cover the UK as a single jurisdiction because they're implementing directives. So the way in which we've done the bulk of that implementation in the UK is to use the Financial Services and Markets Act 2000. Okay? That's the principle implementing legislation. What that actually does for the most part is two important things for our purposes. Okay? Number one, it made the FSA. So the FSA came into existence because of FSMA. Okay? FSMA says there shall be a thing called a Financial Services Authority, it shall be beautiful, and it shall have the following powers and objectives and everything else. Yes? And you've discussed them in seminars, hopefully. Okay? The other thing that FSMA has also done then is to create powers for the FSA to create the FSA handbook. So it's made a thing called the FSA, and on an ongoing basis it gives it lots and lots of powers to make the FSA handbook. So the FSA handbook is where you find all the regulations. Yes, and I stuck that up on Beto. We went on the internet together. It was terribly exciting. It was all very modern. We looked at the internet together, and we saw that on fsa.gov.uk, we've got the entire FSA handbook there, and we can read it and know what all those things say. Okay, so that's where all the rules are. Those rules are created by the FSA as a result of powers given to it by FSMA. Now, some of that is entirely UK originated. So the fact we were going to create something called the FSA was entirely a UK idea. Yeah, that was the Blair government deciding we're going to have one single regulator to do all of this. We could have decided at the UK level to have 12 different regulators, one for insurance, one for mortgages, one for securities, one for banking, and the way we used to do it. Yeah, have lots of little self-regulatory organisations. But the decision was, let's be more American, let's have a big regulator to do everything. Okay. So, we had to implement all these directives. All the directives talk about the need for a, quote, competent authority, i.e. some body in each member state that will actually do the work required by the directives. Yeah. For our purposes, it's the FSA that does pretty much all of this. So we created one body to do it all, and then decided in the financial crisis it was probably rubbish. And so now the Tories are talking about getting rid of it and letting the Bank of England do it all instead, because that will solve the problem, obviously. You know, Labour don't want to give up the FSA because they made it and therefore, you know, feel that they ought to try and support it. So in the UK we decided the body we were going to use to do all of this, our competent authority for these various things, would be the Financial Services Authority, the FSA. So it's made by FSMA, and FSMA gives it all the powers then to create the FSA handbook. So that's where all the regulations are. So in terms of questions about if it says one thing in the directive and a different thing in the FSA handbook, EU law question about have you properly implemented the directive then? A lot of these directives, as we've discussed, give a lot of scope and powers to the member states to decide how to go about implementing. So there is a lot of scope there as to what words you're going to use exactly, as long as you give effect ultimately to the policy in the directive. Now, if you look at the FSA handbook, you will see that a number of its rules have a little EU flag in the margin. You know that blue flag with the circle of yellow stars, yes, which grows or shrinks in number depending? That little EU flag is passages where the FSA handbook simply quotes from those directives, and it does that a lot. It does that a lot. Other places where you have a Union Jack, yes, we feel more patriotic about this, and that's where we're quoting things from UK statutes, which often go slightly beyond what's required by the directive. And we're going to talk about that in a lot more detail when we do securities regulations. But the headline idea is a number of these directives expressly say member states can create regulations which go further than this directive. So the directives, in many circumstances, create a minimum level, particularly in securities regulation, which we'll do in detail towards the end of the semester, and a bit of that after Christmas as we pause for breath. So that's why there are some UK elements there. Basically, we're implementing the directives. So occasionally we use different language, and that seems to be fine as long as we are implementing what's intended in the directive. We are allowed to go a bit further with our regulation, provided that that doesn't become a way of discriminating between things that are done in the UK and discriminating against, you know, things that are done from France, things that are done from Germany, and everything else. Go to Ireland today, of course, and want to know about things being discriminated against the French, then you'll probably find a lot of support for that. That's just because Thierry Henry decided to play basketball in what was otherwise a football match. Still not talking about, doesn't really matter. So there we are. So that's the hierarchy, that's where all this stuff has come from. Yes, a lot of this has started in Europe. There are lots of things that have started just in the UK. So we're talking about contract law at the minute. You know, this is all good old school English contract law, not UK contract law. Certainly not European contract law. So there are lots of things we're talking about that are entirely English. Other things that start in the UK, like the idea we should have an FSA to do all this, but a lot of the principles, like MiFID, begin in Europe. Indirectives have to be implemented. They're implemented by FSMA, which gives powers to the FSA to create the regulations. And what the FSA does 85-90% of the time is just to copy and paste from the directives and copy and paste from the Commission's technical regulations. Okay. So the fun bits are the bits where the wording seems to be slightly different. And there's an EU law question there, if you're into EU law, about, you know, are we implementing, what's the ramification of that? You know, terribly exciting. Or, you know, are we doing effectively the same thing but through slightly different words? In the old days, you see, the FSA never used the European language. It always paraphrased everything into FSA speak. But they had a real change of culture a few years ago, probably about 2005, when they decided it was safer just to copy and paste from the directive. And then someone had the idea, because it's on the internet, let's use a little European flag symbol. Okay. Jolly good. So that's that. Okay, it seems to be bothering lots of people as to how this hierarchy function and where all these things wash through. Is that okay? Any questions about that? Is that all right? Jolly good. All right then. What was the other thing? What was the other thing? Damn! I'm getting old. Death. Winter is creeping into the garden. And I've stopped caring. About the fact winter's coming. I mean, death will actually be a release by now. Oh, there'll be no email after death. I'll know if I've gone to hell, because there'll be email. Alistair Hudson at hell.uk. And a rule that you must answer within 24 hours. Yeah, jolly good. Okay. The other thing will come back to me, and I'll remember in a bit. Hello. oh my God, the last neuron just sparked into life. Again, how does the hierarchy function in terms of things that are regulated in the UK? How does all this work? We have FSMA. And FSMA, if you recall, says in section 19 that thou shalt not enter into the business of financial services unless thou hast authorisation from the FSA. Yeah, it's biblical. I'm hedging my bets in my old age. I'm going to die. So the question is, what are the regulated activities? Okay. If we're not allowed to indulge in regulated activities without authorisation under section 19, what are those activities? Well, Schedule 2 of FSMA lists them. And that's when many lectures ago I went through those various products on the list that were in the handout. You know, what's the share, what's the model. We did a quick half-hour sprint through some of that, if you recall. And I will do those podcasts, I promise. Schedule 2 lists all of those regulated activities. So if you're involved in one of those, even if it seems to be really mundane, like selling shares in something terribly exciting, if it's on that list and you are dealing in shares or contracts for differences or bonds or whatever it may be, then you require authorisation. We then had, if you remember, the regulated activities order, which basically creates exceptions, or it gives a gloss as to all those regulated activities in Schedule 2. That's kind of a headline list in Schedule 2. That's as much as you need to know, really. But the regulated activities order goes into far greater detail. It explains, for example, that things that are ordinary trust business, if you're acting as a trustee for an ordinary trust, you know, Paul and Constance, one of those really baby basic ones, why aren't you in the business of safekeeping someone's money, which is on the list of regulated activities? Well, excludes that, for example, Article 66, if I remember rightly. And so the RAO is really a list of exclusions from things that are otherwise regulated. So that's how that fits together. You have to have authorisation if you're doing one of the things listed in Schedule 2, and the Regulated Activities Order 2001, and it sets out basically what are the exceptions to things that otherwise would seem to fall within Schedule 2. Basically qualifies the definitions. Okay? So that's how all that plugs together. Johnny Good. It's all nice and simple at root. I mean, there's lots of acronyms and stuff, but that's what's going on in the background. That seems to have been bothering some people, so I thought I'd spend a second on it. Okay? Good-o. So that's really background for a lot of what we're doing. In terms of assessment, a lot of what we're focusing on from the regulation, some of those big picture ideas about why do we regulate the way we do, are there better ways of regulating and so on and so forth. Okay. Good-o. And so part of what you could be doing through this course is kind of trying to assemble. Why isn't that projector working? It's trying to assemble how these things function. Okay. Why isn't that working? I'm asking you.
Work. If I shake this, will it work?
No.